Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to The Man's Voice. Glad to have any of you that are here listening to us and working with us and would like to call in with us. Remember, if you anytime during this show would like to join our conversation, all you got to do is pick up the phone and dial 646-668-8740 to join in the conversation. We have gentlemen from all around the nation. The home station moved, and this is our first broadcast from the new location. So if there's any technical difficulties, we apologize up front, but I think we've worked everything out and we can move forward. I want to say hello to the panelists. Hello, sirs.
Hello, David.
You know, one of the things I want to start off by talking about is something that's been around for a while, but I want to talk to the panel about it and get their points of view on how they feel about it. But it's the 49er football player Colin Kaepernick, as the way I pronounce it, and his failure to stand up during the national anthem. At first, he was sitting down. Now he is kneeling on one knee, and it seems to be causing a lot of thoughts on both sides of the fence out there. So I wanted to open it up, and what are you guys thinking about it? Because I do know now that there are other athletes from other teams and other sports who are now joining in. I know just today the Kansas City Chief cornerback raised his fist on the U.S. National Anthem as being played. One of the other players have sat down doing the National Anthem. Also, it looks like it's starting to pick up and move on. I know that the 49ers have now come up with $1 million to put into diversity and those kind of things in sports. So is this a good thing? Ron, why don't you pick up with that? What do you think about this?
Well, David, I'm all about respect and, you know, for the flag and country and all of that. But I'm also, totally for freedom of speech and the right to protest in any way, as long as it's not harming other people that you see fit. So, I don't really have a problem with any athletes kneeling or not putting their hands over their heart or however it is that they wish to make a statement. I have no problem with that because, you know, this country, one of the things that we value most is the freedom of speech that we have. Otherwise, you know, if you want to tell everybody how to behave and what to do and when to do it and when not to do it, then move to a dictatorship and we'll be fine there. Move to Venezuela.
Okay. What do you think, Joe?
I think it's a smart thing. I think he came up with a very effective protest that's going to be on everyone's, you know, at the forefront. Every Sunday he's there sitting down, and it's why is he sitting? Does he have a good reason for sitting? I think he does have a very good reason for sitting. And I think that the fact that he's sitting during the national anthem is appropriate because I think the police officers of this country are the ones letting down the flag. They're the ones letting down the national anthem, and he's just bringing attention to it. Although it seems to me that people are more upset him sitting rather than why he is sitting, you know. But I think it's a appropriate and smartly done.
All right. What about you, Don? Where are you on this?
Well, I like to make it 3-for-3. I agree with the other two gentlemen. I think we all have our own individual platforms in life, and if you don't stand for something, you'll bend for anything. Excuse the pun, but I think he's using his platform. This is the greatest country in the world, and yet we still have some issues that we need to deal with. And I think he's being very wise on using his quarterback football position in life to deal with it. I saw a video where other political candidates during the election for the Republican Party were putting their hands over their chest, and there was Donald Trump just standing there. So, I mean, you know, how we salute the flag and how we represent our country can come in many shapes, forms, and fashions. He reminds me of a modern-day Muhammad Ali.
All right. What about you? I think I heard Harold. Did you come in?
Frank.
Okay. Anyway, Frank, you wanna... yeah. Come,
yeah.
What do you think about?
I'm 4 for 4 on this. I mean, it's his right. I'm retired military. That's why we fight. We fight so that people in America can be free to do whatever free people want to do. That includes burning the flag, not standing the tension. Additionally, is that he's taking a position, and that division, and he's providing funding also. His owner is providing $1 million funding the appropriate agencies in the area. He's actually upped it to more than $1 million now because he volunteered $1 million of his first $1 million that he makes. And plus his jersey sales, I understand, are going off the wall right now. So he's going to give all that, the proceeds for that as well. But it's his right to do that. The flag of the United States of America is not Jesus Christ. It is a symbol in this country that we rally behind, but it is not a sanctifying, sanctimonious type thing. I've always stood at the flag. I've always saluted, and I'm retired from the military. I will continue to do that. But I do not fly an American flag on special holidays for the same reason this gentleman is not standing at attention now. And it's been that way all my life. I don't go around talking about it very much, hardly ever, and I would do fight for this country, but I'm not going to show what I would consider to be inappropriate leadership, and that is two accounts. Not for me would be not saluting the flag, and two would be waving the flag. So I think I'm somewhere between those two positions.
All right. One of the things I really want to emphasize today is, and it just seems like yesterday, 15 years ago on today, the United States of America was attacked. Many, many people lost their lives. And I want to get where you were when this happened. Where were you, Ron, when 15 years ago on today's date when we were attacked? What are your thoughts today about it?
I remember the day the morning very, very vividly, just as if it happened, you know, 2 weeks ago, basically. And I was at work. I was in the office. I worked at the zoo locally here at the time. And I remember that a bunch of us gathered in the boardroom around a TV watching the news, and everybody was like in shock, and we just couldn't believe what it was like surreal. It was like it wasn't really happening. And then they closed the zoo early for obvious reasons. And I remember driving home, and for me to get home, I had to drive past Miami International Airport. And I guess we all remember that, flights were canceled for several, many days, I think, after the attack. And so I remember driving by the airport, which on any other normal day, you would see flights coming in and out like every 30 seconds. And it was just the most strange feeling to drive by there and not see any officers. I feel about it today. I mean, I still feel for all the poor people, all the innocent lives that were lost, and I just can't, comprehend it. I try not to think about it, actually, because when I do try to think about, what those people went through, it's just, I can't comprehend it. So, because I've been to the former World Trade Center many times myself and underneath, where the PATH train used to go. So it's just incomprehensible to me. So that's how I feel.
All right, Don, where were you on 9/11 15 years ago?
David, I remember it so vividly. At that time, that early morning, I entered the television station. I was a general sales manager for Fox affiliate WSMH TV 66 in Flint, Michigan. And we had just finished the sales meeting talking about where commercials would be scheduled and at what time. And I had about 10 account executive salespeople in the meeting with me. And we had the television on quite naturally, and we saw this plane drive into one of the towers, and everybody looked at each other, and it was almost like we were seeing a movie. And we looked, and we said, oh, my God, we are at war. Everybody intuitively knew at that television station that we were being attacked. And at that same time, we were getting the national feed, and we had to preempt every commercial that was going to air for the entire week. That meant that the salespeople would not run any commercials, and they were being affected financially. So I had to go to corporate and get funding for the sales department. But most importantly, they weren't concerned with that. They were concerned with our country. And we were showing a bit of fear because we were under attack. And we didn't know where the attack was coming from. And then Washington happened, and then Pennsylvania happened. And it was just a terrible time in the broadcast field because we had to report the news, and then we had the local people waiting for us to tell the news. Being in the media was not fun that entire week.
Wow. What about you, Joe? Where were you?
I was working in the Owosso post office. The supervisor made the announcement that a plane had struck the World Tower. And I really wasn't sure what was going on because I didn't have a video or a TV. Then I went out into the field and called up the wife on my cell phone, and they had not yet turned on the television to get the day's news. So I said, yeah, turn on the TV. And her and my son started watching it, and they were going, wow, this is something. But I didn't really quite get the entire magnitude of it later until I got off of work. And, I immediately wanted to see the news. But, I wasn't there. I didn't see the video till that evening.
Those were some really deep, disturbing news stories during that time. Bruce, where were you?
I was coming back from a meeting with a business meeting with one of my clients, and just pulled into the driveway of my main office down in Troy area, down in Detroit area. And I thought to myself, when the first plane hit, because when I was just pulling in, I heard it, and I said, I kind of shook my head. I didn't hear it. I just heard, did I? And, of course, your mind starts painting pictures much faster than your eyes can sometimes. So I went inside and saw what was going on. There was TVs on, like, yeah, this is real. And I had a call from my son, and we started talking, and my perspective quickly changed to something a little bit different. He and I both started praying for the people in the towers, because neither one had fallen yet, or I don't remember now exactly if the first one had gotten that far yet. But he asked me, he said, "Dad, are the towers going to come down?" And I said, "Based on what I'm hearing, yeah, they are." And he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "They're going to pile drive themselves right into the ground." He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "The heat, steel at 1,500 degrees, my engineering background started coming into play." And I said, "I hope I'm wrong, but if they get to a certain temperature, they're going to turn to mush and the whole building's going to come down on itself because it's an outward structure. It doesn't have a core in it." And when it started to happen, and I said, "Just pray for the people." I said, "Whether it happens or not, just start praying that they get out in time." And that was my perspective of, it was so scary. And when it happened, I was speechless. I just in awe.
All right. What about you, Frank? Where were you when 15 years ago?
I was at home looking at the Today Show, and they were getting ready to cut off, and then all of a sudden the first aircraft struck that building, and everybody thought that it was a small aircraft that had just strayed from LaGuardia or Kennedy and inadvertently hit the tower. But while that determination was being made on the air, the second plane hit, and it was, I think it was a live shot at that time of the second plane hitting, and we knew at that time that it wasn't an accident, that there was something catastrophic happening. So I didn't go to work that day. I was at home, and I probably listened to every news piece of information on it, including the plane diversions to other places, the Pennsylvania situation where the plane hit the ground, and the Pentagon building. So it was real extraordinary. I read an article yesterday that spoke of two new reserves that manned their aircraft in Washington, D.C. without weapons on there, and the lead person, the senior person, was going to hit the cockpit with his aircraft and then try to punch out simultaneously. And the second person, who was 25 years old then, a lady, was going to hit the tail end, but she was not planning on punching out. She was planning on hitting it because she thought it would be better to take, because they had orders to take that aircraft down, the one that landed and crashed in Pennsylvania. And they had orders to take it down, and she thought it would be better to take the aircraft down than to parachute out and miss the aircraft. So that's where I was. It was a Pearl Harbor type day for me, and it just reminds me even today of the amount of hostilities. As long as we have, I think, hostilities among men and women, we have the potential for that to happen anywhere and everywhere, that there's that type of hatred.
Right. And so I want to talk about 15 years, and we all know where we were, so we were all there. Do we feel that we are in a better place with 15 years of knowing what could happen to us, or do we feel that we are more comfortable with our country? I don't understand how come I am not aware of these things that are going on and what could possibly happen. Be prepared, all those kinds of things. I don't see a lot of preparedness instructions on how to keep ourselves safe. But are we in such a bubble that we don't need that, or we're not, and we're just not being told? I'm concerned about where we are. I don't know where we are as a country in terms of those type of events happening. I guess you can't really project them or predict them, but at least where are we on that? Why don't you pick up with that, Bruce? Where 15 years, are we better off now? And is our country in a better state to handle these kind of situations? Or are we where we were 15 years ago?
Well, people will, I think sometimes pull the tough situations in their life together, mold them together, like what's going on overseas, what's going on with ISIS, what's going on with the turmoil globally, and also the struggles they have at home, whether it's prejudice issues, whether it's home struggles, whether it's money issues, where all those things, I think, sometimes get pulled together by a lot of people, and that develops an emotional concern for them. I think for a long time, I don't think people were digging into the news and so forth enough to really realize, or maybe we weren't being told enough to really realize how bad it is overseas with ISIS and the fragmentation and the growth of extremism and all of that. And I'm still not sure a lot of people totally grasp that, myself included. I try to, but I'm not sure I do. So in a roundabout way of saying, are we better off or not? I think with the global concerns going on and that kind of threat, I don't think we're better off. And I'm not blaming any particular person or our president or anyone. I'm just saying, based on where we were at 9/11 and now, in a lot of ways, we've kind of let the monster out of the box. And in some ways, in those ways, we're not better off. We're more concerned, nervous, scared, and sensitive to what's going on now more than ever.
Let me turn this over to Frank. You have a military background, and I'm sure your thoughts on this are probably a little different than us who are neophytes in terms of military and what they're doing and those kinds of things. How do you feel 15 years later now, our country is in a better position, or are we about the same as we were 15 years ago? What would you say to us?
Well, I would say that if we can, the more that we can disengage from being in warfare in the Middle East, the safer we're going to be in this country. And the reason for that is that the U.S., because of our attitude, or possibly because we're not politically correct sometimes, we alienate people that are impoverished, severely impoverished. Now, this incident that happened in the World Trade Center is similar to what's going on a weekly basis in the Middle East. In other words, lives lost, the very much a catastrophe to families, injuries to people, et cetera. And, you know, it's the eye for eye type thing, and everybody fights back, and so everybody walks around wounded. And we are a wounded people, and we are a frightened nation as well. So I personally think that what we've got to work on is our peace process and bringing people together, because that's going to provide the safety for our children. And other than that, we're not going to do it through fighting someone, because people now will use, you know, suicide vests. They will walk into nightclubs. They will walk into schools. Anybody that has a grievance, a significant grievance. So I think our job is to reduce those grievances as much as possible, and that increases our safety. And that's from my military perspective. You know, a guy that's rode nuclear submarines, missile submarines, and other type of weapon systems like that.
All right, Ron, what do you think?
Well, I think I think we live in a different world today than 15 years ago. And I this is my personal feeling, but I think we're much more vulnerable in terms of internal attacks within the U.S. And again, as Bruce said, I'm not blaming anyone in particular. I just think it's a worldwide phenomenon. And, you know, you look at the attacks that go on around the world, you know, in our allies countries, you know, England, France, Germany, Spain. And to me, it just seems like it's more, much more likely to happen in maybe different ways. Like Frank said, you know, somebody can wrap a bomb around the vest and walk into a nightclub and kill a bunch of people and kill themselves at the same time. They could easily do that in an airport or any place else, you know, a concert, as happened in France, you know. So I just think we live in a different world, and I don't think that anybody is much safer today than they were 15 years ago. In fact, I think we're less safe.
Okay. What about you, Joe? You think the same way?
My take is it's technology, worldwide communication. You got somebody in the Middle East telling, you know, he says something, you know, 20 years ago, maybe only people 50 miles around him heard it. But now he says he calls out for jihad, and the whole world, you know, billions of people hear him, and it's some will be influenced. You got North Korea, they got technology. You know, maybe 50 years ago, they're just backwards, weird people. But now, you know, he has the technology to build a nuclear weapon, the technology to launch it. You know, so, you know, you have modern technology, but you have, like, still the poor judgment of these fanatics or, you know, people in power that can export their opinions. They have a platform due to technology. You look at Russia. I mean, they're not going to attack us, but, you know, we can do some computer hacking and wreak havoc that way. So, you know, in just the same way, like, you know, when you have Ebola in Africa years ago, it would just stay there in Africa. Or if you had Zika in South America, it would just stay there. But now people travel, they bring in the viruses because of technology. And I think technology now is also bringing in the terrorism that people, you know, they have access to weapons that can do a lot of damage. And it's because of technology. But I think there is always, you know, the hatred can now be expanded with technology. And I think that's the problem. The challenge has grown because of that. Just in the same way, just in the same way that viruses or, you know, spread through technology, this hatred is spreading through technology. And that's the problem, I think, how technology is now being used. It's being used for good things and bad things.
All right. If you, one of our listening audience, had a point, want to talk about where we've been in the last 15 years, call us 646-668-8740. Mr. Don, what do you think in the last 15 years? Are we better off or are we not? Are we complacent? What is going on now? What happened in the last 15 years in your mind?
Well, David, I think we're more complacent and more vulnerable than ever before because complacency has set in. We're being distracted. A lot of times we're being distracted by leaders that will take us on a different route and not focus on what is really at hand with us. And we need strong leadership because I see a lot of distractions. And these other countries would love to repeat what happened 15 years ago because everybody wants to be the big dog in the world today. And we have come to a time and place in America where we've lost the first love, that spirit of love. We seem to want to be the police dog for every country, be the caretaker for everybody's business. We need to get back to the things that really matter in this country. And like my brother just talked about, with technology, we didn't have social media platforms we had 15 years ago. We just didn't have it. People can do something today, and within 5 minutes, it will be known around the world. So we're in a different age right now. We've become complacent, and we've lost our first love.
One of the things you said that I want to question is you said we need to get back to things that really count like they were before. So, but you're saying take a step backwards. But I think needing to take a step forward and get ahead of that game. I mean, if we do things we did before, technology wasn't there. We need to get ahead of technology, ahead of all that. So I don't think we're looking at, and it might be that all of us are thinking we need to get back to the way we were. I think that we need to get back to the way we were, but maybe that's the problem. Maybe we keep trying to get back to the way things were and not just trying to get ahead of the way to get in front of things. I mean, it seems to people in the countries that I grew up in school learning that were poor and unable to do anything are the people that are holding us hostage.
When I say we need to get back to the way things were, I had more confidence in my leaders than I do now, David. I just don't have that confidence in my leadership in the United States right now.
You know, that seems to be a mantra or a theme in all of our conversations. Our leaders are not the leaders that we need for running our country today. But we keep saying that. We've said that just about every time we get on the every Sunday. We have this, you know, we need better leadership. We need better leadership. Why are we choosing the people we're choosing if they're not good leaders? What is that? Why don't you, Ron, why do we keep choosing the people and then we're saying they're not the good people?
Wow, that's a $100,000 question. I think, like you said, we talked about this before, and, you know, we have the right to put the people that we want leading us in charge, you know, from a local level all the way to the White House.
Can I jump in for a quick second? Because I have a question for you. We just said that technology is there. We didn't have it many years ago, but that's making everything move. That is what people are telling people. That's how they get violence. And so if we have all this technology and all those things and the people are telling us who they are, what is it about us to keep picking the wrong person that is telling us who they are? This election is coming up. A lot of that is going on right now. But what is wrong with Americans if we can't choose the people to put in position to do the right thing that we want them to do? We have all this technology telling us who they are. Something is wrong with that picture. I'm sorry, but
well,
Ron.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we have to remind ourselves that just because we don't like somebody that's in office doesn't make them the right or wrong person, because that's irrelevant. They might be the wrong leader for us, but they might be the right leader for somebody else. So, you know, just getting a little philosophical. But, you know, I think that there's a lot of people in this country that don't have the type of education to make intelligent decisions when they go out to cast the ballot. And, you know, a lot of times they base it on one or two emotional items. You know, like I'll use my next door neighbor, for example. And, you know, and I know this because we're friends on Facebook, so he posts things all the time. And I know that the number one reason that he's voting for Trump is because he doesn't want his guns taken away. And that's the way he feels, as idiotic as that may seem, that Hillary's going to, you know, all of a sudden come around and take everybody's guns away. But that's the way he feels, and that's his mentality. And, I'm, you know, I apologize, you know, to him. You know, I'm not necessarily calling him stupid, but, you know, people have different points of views on different things, and they're going to vote emotionally. And that's, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there in the country that are not making intelligent decisions when they go to vote.
All right. What about you, Bruce? Why is it that we're not choosing the right people when we have all the tools afforded to us to make that choice? What is it? What's going on?
One of the main components, I would never say it's, I'm not even sure if it's the major one. But one of the main components is, if you look back at what newscasting used to be nonprofit, free time for the news, and news was objective. It wasn't a popularity contest. They didn't try to sway. They didn't try to opinionate, and they didn't try to manipulate your opinion. We now have a press that will dissect, resect, analyze, tear apart, and find all the things that many of us might say are foolish things when there's much more important things to talk about, like issues and so forth. And what I'm getting to, and I've heard this from many people that I thought would have been excellent leaders in their own right for certain things, is, are you crazy? I am not going to try and even run for that office because I will be destroyed by the press. And that doesn't necessarily mean someone's going to feel like I have something to hide. It's just ludicrous what's doing, where the press, I think, in many ways and forms could be such a strong leader to help this, our own country. They, in many ways, I think, are falling extremely short in doing that. They could be much more of a leader than what they are today. And I hear people over and over say, the good people don't run for office anymore. And I think in some parts, in some ways, that's very true.
What about you, Don? Do you believe good people don't run for office anymore? And how come you haven't run?
Well, you know, David, I believe what Bruce just said. Good people just don't run for office anymore. When I look at the good people that have good quality ideas to lead us in the future, they just don't want the headache.
Right.
The press and people have made it so difficult for good people to run that you're almost under attack if you want to do some good in the neighborhood. You got to be thick-skinned to run for office today. First of all, you got to have very little skeletons in your closet. And Lord knows I got a lot of skeletons in my closet. I'm not worried about the skeletons falling out because I've already kicked them out. But the thing is, David, you know, it takes a special breed. It takes a special breed, and I don't think we're getting that special breed right now. The media is so opinionated. We got stations today that actually take sides of candidates. We never had that before. We had PBS stations where people would keep the news fair, simple. And now we got stations saying fair and balanced, but they represent one particular party. I mean, it's stupid. It's stupid. Me being in the media, I'm seeing it firsthand. And I just don't like it, man. I've been doing this for 47 years, and I'm seeing something I've never seen before. I've never seen anything like this before in my life. So I don't think I'll be running for office, but I would like to continue representing candidates.
You know, one of the things that I find difficult to understand is how much money it takes to run for office these days. And a lot of grassroots people are being represented by people who don't look like them or act like them because they don't have the money to do it. I think it could be very expensive to run for office.
Yes.
Just look at this presidential campaign. I'm amazed at the millions of dollars that goes into media just to talk about each other. It's amazing, even at the local level, putting signs up. Then there are restrictions. You can't put a sign here on this corner or a sign here on this corner, but I noticed that the sheriffs who are running have signs all over the place. We really need to relook at these people learning. But what about you, Frank? What do you think about this conversation that we're having?
Well, I think that you're right that we're not going to attract the best people to run for candidacy in office. And, you know, you go back to General Powell when they was thinking that he might run for the presidency, and his wife strongly was against that. From that perspective, there were issues about his personal safety. And we live in a tear-down culture. I don't blame the news media on this, okay? I think we really, honestly, as citizens, have to look at ourselves in the mirror, okay? I don't think that the news people misinterpret our feelings. I think that we don't like what we hear or what we see of ourselves, and we try to put it off on someone else. That's what I think. And you're right, it is very costly to run for office, but I think it's been pretty much decided in America that anyone has the right to pour in as much money as they want to try to get their candidate elected. And therein shapes, that money shapes the message that that candidate is going to be espoused in that candidate's lips.
All right. What about you, Joe? What are your thoughts on this subject?
Well, I like Hillary, so I think we have a good leader right there. I think she's just been torn down. As far as, like, the technology goes, like, you know, when you got the U.S. with the NSA listening to other conversations, they say, no, you can't do that. But I think that's what needs to be done. I think this country potentially could like, listen to all the conversations going on in this country, in Germany. They know what the chancellor in Germany is saying. And, you know, when they get caught or exposed by Snowden, you know, there's a big wave of criticism. But I think that's what you need to do to stop people from flying airlines into buildings, is to get the information, the intelligence. But they don't want that to happen. I mean, Obama's being criticized for using drones. I think those drones have been very effective. But, you know, he's saying that he's being criticized because too many people are being killed, as opposed to Putin, who just mass bombs the entire country, gets his 3 or 4 terrorists, and kills 30 or 40,000 civilians. And, you know, he's getting his way. So, I mean, I think people are against the U.S. government becoming powerful enough to, well, I think the government party is doing it anyways, but they're against them listening into their phone conversations. They're against them listening to everybody. That they feel it's infringement. But I think that's what's necessary to stop the bad guys. You got to. I'm in full support of the NSA listening in on my phone conversations. There's, you know, it's my phone conversations are boring. You know, if they find out I'm cheating on my wife, which I'm not, but if they did, I don't think they would spread that around or they care. You know, they're looking for guys that are having conversations about how to get some nuclear weapons, and then the NSA, you know, could maybe stop them. Or, you know, they're looking for guys that are trying to figure out how to make bombs, and if they're going to talk about it over the phone, I'm hoping the government's listening in. And I'm in full support of Obama using drones to take out whoever we need to protect this country. But he's getting a lot of criticism for doing that.
That's right. He gets a lot of criticism for a lot of the things that he's doing. And unfortunately, this is the end of his tenure. But I know a lot of people are wondering that, you know, maybe we should have did another 4 years. But anyway, talking about drones.
David, can I interject something?
Sure, Bruce.
But that's part of the example I was trying to paint. Maybe I didn't do it very well. I think it was Frank that said, I'm not saying that the press is the reason or the cause. I agree with whoever said that. I think it was you, Frank. That I agree. We got to look to ourselves. All I'm asking, and hearing the conversation, is I don't want any of the press, I don't care what form it is, to make the opinion and the decision for me and say, well, this poll says this, Our source tells us that because people start to believe, well, then that's what it is. Instead of thinking for themselves, give me the information. Let me decide on my own. Don't twist it, turn it, color it, slant it. Give me the facts. That's what you're supposed to be doing. That's what the press used to do. They are so far removed from that now, it's ridiculous.
That's true. Want to change the conversation a little bit and go to a different direction. We were talking about drones. And I want to talk about drones on a different aspect because I noticed today that another company came out and is going to start trying to do deliveries by drone. Chipotle restaurants are now going to start doing deliveries by drone. I know that there were a couple of other companies that have already said they were going to do it. Does anybody have a problem with, and I don't understand how that's going to happen. A drone flies in over your house and I guess through GPS drops a box on your front yard.
Oh, man.
I don't understand it. How does a drone deliver fast food? How does a drone deliver fast food? I'm sure they worked it out, but I don't understand. And I don't really agree to it. Can you imagine walking outside and seeing all these restaurants, drones flying all over? You've got pizza companies and everybody, you got drones flying all over. It just sounds not only very difficult and very messy, but it sounds like something who's photographing who? What's going on? What do you think about that, Frank?
Let me.
Yeah.
I want to say, if you can do it, go ahead. I mean, I'd like to see them succeed. You know, I'm with you. It seems preposterous. But if they can do it in a successful and effective way, I'll just, you know, stand up and applaud. I have my doubts, but all right, go ahead. Let's see you do it. That's my attitude. I ain't going to stop you. But if you attempt this and it's a disaster causing traffic accidents and drones crashing into, you know, people, and then, you know, well, we got to outlaw it, whatever. But if you can do it successfully, good.
I'll give you
a chance.
Yeah, I want to jump in. Let me just say this right here.
Wait a minute, Frank.
I don't think there's a problem with this commercial use of drones except for the following. You know that someone's going to rig a weapon up to the drone, and someone's going to assassinate somebody else, all right, whether it's lawful or not lawful. That's technology. And when there is a when any time that I'm looking at a show and there's a drone maybe just spying on someone and it's mentioned in the show, I'm always a heartbeat away from thinking that a weapon's going to be fired from there. Okay? So that's the problem with, we have evil in the world and we have people that will use any type of system they can to hurt someone else. So you're going to have, you know, so I don't have a problem with legal, correct use of drones. I don't think there's going to be a problem with them crashing into each other because they will eventually have avoidance systems just like they do on cars that says, you know, if you're in 10 feet or 12 feet or whatever, or in this particular corridor area, you can only fly so high, et cetera. That's the people that are legally using it. I don't think you can put it back in the box. It's out. And they're selling them in stores, whether or not they have the right to put them in the air and given locations.
All right. I want to say earlier that Joe was has a relationship with the United States Postal Service, so I got his. They can do it. Let them try it. What do you think about this, Don? Do you want to have your fast food delivered by a drone?
I don't think it's going to happen, David. I just don't think it's going to happen. Just like we can use it for good, I think the bad will supersede the good.
All right. Wow.
I don't have to elaborate on that.
Yeah, but there are companies now that are testing it. I think it was Amazon that started the first, and I think they have started testing. I don't know where that.
But they haven't.
But you don't
they haven't been licensed
it.
To do it. They haven't been licensed to do it.
Okay.
They were talking about going on the internet, ordering mail order, and instead of it going through the mail, send it by drone. And for Christmas, it never happened.
Okay.
What they're telling us at the post office is that Amazon is now going to attempt to set up their own delivery hubs. They're gonna try and become their own UPS. Not only deliver their own parcels, but deliver other
right.
companies' parcels. So they're gonna go.
Yeah, they're
it seems to me they're putting their resources into competing with us. Us being U.S. Post Office, UPS, FedEx, on their own terms, rather than drones. Unless
right.
they got the money to finance both endeavors.
Yeah. David?
Yes. Bruce, go ahead.
This disturbs me for a couple other reasons that we never hear anybody talk about. As Frank said, it could be used as a weapon. It can violate privacy, all abuses, but nonetheless, if the capability is there, and we got these things flying around thick as thieves in a highly populated urban area, you know, have they really thought out all the things that could happen and the disruption of just plain peace and quiet? Are we not going to have that anymore? And you get the sense that as soon as they say, well, this UPS thinks, well, this might give us an edge over the Postal Service, so let's go with it. Yeah, this is good. Has the industry really thought about just because you can doesn't mean you should? And I'd have a real problem with if it got highly successful, then you can't stop it once that happens. We got these little buggers buzzing all over the place. Say, if not every place on the planet, but let's say in a busy downtown core area, and a lot of the youth now want to live downtown. They don't want to live out in suburbs like us old folk do. But have they thought of that? Well, nah, that'll be okay. They don't think about that kind of stuff. I mean, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
That's right. I think that, you know, once it happens, you're right.
Once they start it off,
it's going to be hard to pull it back. But I think we'll see what the tests. I haven't heard anything from any of the tests that are being done by Amazon. So I think it must not be doing good. For they be bragging all about it, I think, if it was.
Yeah.
I want to change the subject just a little bit about what we in America expect from our retailers. I know when I go out, one of the things that annoys me most is, when I grew up, customer service was a big piece. People were very nice. Sometimes stores now, you find a few that are, but most of them aren't. But it seems that Americans have now decided to hit some of the major retailers where it hurts the most, in their pockets, by not going back to their stores. Two of the biggest stores, Sears and Kmart, are suffering and closing stores. And they did a big study on why this was happening and found out that Americans said that they're not going to shop in those stores anymore for several reasons. One, lack of customer service, poor quality of products, lengthy checkout procedures, and messy, depressing stores. And I'm glad Americans decided to take a stand. Sears and Kmart, you're right. They have gone downhill in customer service, but I didn't know that. In my mind, I didn't see Americans taking a stand, but according to this report that was done by USC, they have. What do you think about that, Don?
I think that that's been a steady decline of the big box stores in America today. And those two stores that you mentioned have been around a long, long time. We've seen the excursion of Walmarts and these big stores like Walmart coming into communities and just knocking out the small independent mom-pop stores. And when you say Kmart and Sears, they were a miniature Walmart. So it started a long time ago. So I wish we would get back to the smaller stores, David, the mom-pop stores. It would build entrepreneurship, and it would be so much better.
I agree, but listen to these numbers. Sears, their sales dropped from, in 1 year, $41 billion in 2000 to $15 billion in 2015. Kmart, you know, which merged with Sears in 2005, their sales have plummeted from $37 billion a year to $10 billion a year. I mean, they were making mega money and treating customers like crap. My God. I'm so glad the United States, the people have said, let's not do this anymore. It's about that time. What do you think about that, Frank?
Well, let me tell you, Dave, the way I saw it was this, Sears bought Kmart, okay? When I did a late entry in college, that was a store we were studying about was Kmart stores, okay, how successful they were. But what happened at Sears is that Sears reduced the number of paid employees that were on the floor. And so instead of having people like when I worked at Sears as an 18-year-old, you walk around and you ask people, could you help them? Well, they didn't have anybody doing that. And basically people hung at the cash register and then they formed long lines to get a product. And the products that they were getting were overly priced products. So that was one of the problems. Sears used to be the number one catalog company in the world. And they lost that to, you know, Amazon and these other folks that have competed with them. So in my local area, the Sears used to have an automotive section at the mall that I'm at. That's now taken over by some – Sears is still there, but their automotive – they've reduced their square footage, and their automotive part is gone. You go to their lawnmower, which is a separate entity on a separate location, and they don't repair lawnmowers anymore. So they've lost quite significantly, and they continue to lose. Kmart, on the other hand, had these stores that they had a number of stores that never got modernized. It looked like, you know, big coliseums or basketball arenas. They never got modernized. They carried inferior thing, and Walmart came in and competed with these guys on their products at a lower pricing, higher quality, lower pricing. And so, I think they're just about done. Between Amazon and Walmart, there's going to be a new – those guys are going to die away. So, but I'm not necessarily so sure it's because of how they communicate, but I do know if you went into their stores at Sears, and I noticed that 20 years ago, you just couldn't find anybody to help you, and when you got your product, you stood in a long line. And the product was, you know, and there's many other stores now that sell electronics, clothing, lawnmowers, and things like that. And so they're basically getting their lunch eaten by others.
Right. All right. We only got a few minutes left, I think about 2 minutes left, but I want to just throw a question out for, you know, as fathers, we, of course, have been buying toys and things for our kids and things that might have happened that – and I guess it's something we'll bring up next time, but I want to talk about glowing screens and your kids looking at them. You know that the University of Southern California have done a study and have came out and have figured out that these children who are using those, it's affecting their frontal cortex, and they're getting into video game addiction. So if you get ready to take your game away from one of your kids and they're fussing and screaming at you, they're probably addicted to these screens. But we're going to talk about that when we start again next year. I want to say thank you for listening and for my panel. Thank you for joining us again. You guys have a great weekend. Anybody want to say anything before we get about 45 seconds? Anybody got anything to say, Don?
How do you like weekend? Atlanta?
Haven't had a chance to see it. I don't know who moved lately, but moving is no fun and unpacking is the worst part, and that's where I am. So I haven't had a chance really to enjoy it, but right now the sunshine, 90 degrees every day has been good. I love it. So have a great week, everyone. And for those who had family or friends who perished in 9/11, on behalf of the Men's Voice, our hearts and prayers are out to all of those families, all of those people that might be celebrating the homecoming of their loved ones or friends. See you again next week. Remember, you can always call in and talk to us, so we want to hear from you. Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Bye,
have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
God bless.